This is that other sports shit. Let's go.
As always, we love to start with ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to the show. Jesse and I have made, I believe, four consecutive Wednesday afternoonish tapings. We are very proud of this. We're very proud of the way we're going. We've just said off the air, we are balls deep into the NFL season. So this is the meat and potatoes. This is when Jesse and I love to do the show. We love talking football, and we love talking fights. We had some interesting fights over the weekend, so we'll discuss that. I have just previewed this week's UFC, and it is below mid. So I have made the executive producer decision and decided to not discuss that at all. But I do want to discuss something with Jesse Thomas, who is, as always, with me. Jesse, last week I threw a Dion question at you. So as always, I will introduce you, and I'm going to throw another random question at you. Let me start here. How are you? How are you doing?
I'm great, grand, and wonderful. It's my weekend. I don't have weekends off like a lot of you lucky folks do, so days off, which are Tuesdays and Wednesdays. It's beautiful out here. It's a little chilly. It's like 40-something degrees, but that's Oregon weather for you at this time of year. And speaking about being balls deep into the NFL, I am balls deep into Christmas, folks. I am so excited. There's 11 days left before the Christmas holiday. It's the day of opening up the gifts, passing out gifts. I've made the decision. So I'm not going to go full on Santa suit, but I'm going to go Santa beard and hat. My kids are way too old to believe in Santa anymore, and that's sad. But it's a fact of life, right? We all kind of, you know, it's the thing that happens. Mm-hmm. But I'm still going to keep the Santa spirit alive on Christmas morning.
I'm at a ripe age where if you still don the mall Santa suit, you can get away with it, I believe.
I'm still wearing something Santa, at least over to the grandkids before I have to go to work that day. So
yeah,
they'll get a little piece of Santa also.
I've been watching. I'm ready to take the show all over the place. I've been watching videos on the old internet of people bringing the Grinch into their house. Someone will come in dressed up as the Grinch and the kids just fucking firing on them, like punching them in the belly, fucking shooting for double leg takedowns. And they're like six, screaming at the top of their lungs. I mean, just fucking wailing at the Grinch. And the moms and dads are just sitting there with the cameras, big fucking smiles, filming their children, just going through a moment in their lives that they may not ever forget. It may possibly be scarring, emotional damage. But listen, you're going to get about 25 views on the old TikTok. So load it up. Load it up. I'm enjoying it. Fuck.
Load up those Grinchy videos, folks.
Listen, 'tis the season. This is what it's about. It's about having fun. It's about the kids. And once again, Jess, we're back at it. You want to talk about it being cold. It was so cold this morning that when I got up to start my goddamn car, my battery died. And now I'm sitting on a dead battery. I had to walk to the store this afternoon to get my Bang to be fueled up for this show. So I sent Jesse photos of me walking to the goddamn store and back, including I have to walk by a farm and there's goats, there's cows, there's roosters. They're just all fucking outside chilling. So I sent him some photos of that too. So
absolutely wonderful. You see Jay walking by. He's got double Bangs.
Yes.
Double Bangs.
I bought two Bangs and a lighter. So you know which way I'm going here. You know how I'm feeling. I'm fucking feeling fantastic. I am on a wave right now, ladies and gentlemen.
Is the season to get lit.
Listen, it is green and it is gold and it is just a beautiful time of the year, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you. All right, here is my question, Jess. Last week, the random question was Deion Sanders. I just want your first thoughts on this. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do this.
Vince McMahon potentially returning to the WWE and in the Booker spot.
I'm going to say unofficially yes, officially no.
Okay. Have you read this? Have you seen this or no?
I've seen some of the stuff that's been going on.
You've seen whispers.
I've heard whispers. I've even read an article. I think it was, I can't remember who, it was a legitimate source. They sent out an article saying how Triple H is actually very unhappy with a lot of the rehires that he's brought back after Vince, you know, shut the door on a bunch of these faces, basically saying, yeah, hey, you guys aren't performing up to maybe my standards. Triple H said, hey, I'm the boss now. I'm the guy. I'm going to rehire you all back because you were all my NXT guys to begin with. And they've been semi-floundering, and now he's unhappy about that. You know what happens if Triple H is unhappy? That means that Vince is very unhappy.
Yeah, that's a trickle effect, right? That's the big, that's dad, basically. That's dad. Yeah, because that's his dad, right? Stepdad. Yes. How do you call it? Father-in-law. Yelling at him. And the tone that Vince McMahon yells, which we've all heard for the past 20 years. And Jesus, imagine how next week's Christmas is going to go when they're, speaking of Christmas, when they're all around the table and they're having a nice slice of turkey and prime rib, because, you know, Vince is a big beef guy, so there's got to be some prime rib there. And Vince is just like, yeah, you paid the Good Brothers $500,000 and now they want to go back and wrestle in New Japan. What the fuck are we doing? What are we doing?
I want to share something to ask you too real quick. Just a thought I've had. So A&W, one special thing about AEW is that they were built on the premise of we're going to cross over. We're going to break down the fourth wall. We're going to go to New Japan. We're going to go to ROH. We're going to go and do Impact. We're going to have champions all over wrestling, all over. And that, I think, is one of the catches for AEW. Now I've noticed this small trend. Even Booker T had mentioned the other night about how a certain wrestler was actually a former ROH champion. You're starting to hear New Japan Wrestling mentioned in WWE broadcasts. It feels dirty to me.
Oh, wow.
Coming from AEW, it feels natural. It's what they were built on. It was built on a wrestling-only, you know, community.
I think the AEW caters more to the internet wrestling fan as well as the older wrestling fan, like our age. And they like the intrigue, the allure of, hey, isn't it cool that we can have wrestlers from other organizations wrestling in our organization? Whether it's, and it feels like there's like four or five different organizations that they've had, whether it's been Impact, whether it's been New Japan, whether it's been NOAH, whether it's been AAA, whether it's been Revolution, where you see some of the best wrestlers from across the pond, like Will Ospreay, right, coming in with his belt, his Revolution title. So I think when they're doing it, it's cool. And it's like, in my opinion, I think it's cool because it's just different. It's like, oh man, that's cool. They're mentioning, it's kind of a dirty little thing that we're so used to not hearing that when you hear it, it's like, oh, this is cool. As opposed to, like you say, the WWE, when they're doing it, and it does, it just seems a little different. It just seems as, you know, the WWE universe is the WWE universe. And once you step into the WWE universe, you don't come from any other universe except the WWE universe. So hearing Michael Cole say New Japan, hearing these other guys mention AAA, it's different. It's different and it's unique. Unfortunately, I don't watch enough WWE to really pick up on it, but I'll see it on the internet. I'll see when people post clips of it.
It's just funny to hear because I believe, and somebody, you may even be able to correct me, but I believe that they used to have a non-disclosure clause part of the contract that a WWE signee would sign. Basically saying, you will not have anything to do with anything outside of WWE products.
Yeah. Oh, 1,000,000%.
And
oh,
now,
yes,
you know, Seth Rollins has mentioned, you know, New Japan and all these other wrestlers now. And it's almost like, almost a slap to Vince's face that Triple H is allowing it to happen. Because Vince built this product on simply WWF WWE. That was it. And now you're having all these other brands being mentioned on his show. And I guarantee you, folks, he still sees it as his show.
1,000,000%. That's his show, his brand. It's, again, the tricky, and I don't want to use slippery slope so early, but here we are. It's a slippery slope where it's almost like, how do you not mention that a guy did great in other organizations? If a guy is 28 and he just shows up on WWE television and he's a great wrestler, a great worker, if you will, we had to wrestle somewhere else for 5 years, 8 years, 10 years to acquire that skill set. Why not mention he wrestled in ROH? Why not mention he wrestled in the indies here? Why not? So they're now mentioning that Booker T student just won that NXT title. Well, Booker T had a wrestling school that put on wrestling shows. So yeah. You're mentioning another promotion, whether you like it, you know, whether you're realizing it or not, and of course they do realize it because there's no way they let someone go out there without a script and without saying, you know, without the keywords that you can and will say and will never say. So we'll keep it moving on the wrestling topics. We're going to do a lot of wrestling in January, Jesse, because I will be at AEW Dynamite January 11th.
Will Mandy Rose be there?
Who knows? Will what's the other chick? Will Sasha Banks be there?
Sasha Banks?
I will be at the January 11th show where it is rumored Sasha Banks will be a mystery partner to former WWE wrestler Saraya, who was, I think, Paige then. I will be at AEW Fresno January 18th. And I will be at New Japan Wrestling in February, San Jose, where it is also rumored Sasha Banks may be, because she's tied to New Japan now. So time will tell. And I would love to talk about those when we cross that bridge. We're going to keep it moving here, Jess.
Yes, let's move.
Let's jump into some fights here. There was a lot of activity over the weekend. There was so much boxing, so much pro wrestling, so much crazy mixed martial arts all day Saturday. I came home and at like 11 o'clock, I was watching boxing from across the pond, followed by ROH, followed by some other boxing, followed by UFC, followed by, there was a Tim Bradley, there was a Teofimo Lopez fight. There was just so much fun. There was just a lot of activity. Anyway, Jess, let's jump right into this UFC pay-per-view. We're going to jump right into the one prelim fight that I want to focus on, right?
All right.
A lot of hype going into this kid. Another time will tell because he's only 18. But I want to focus a little bit on Raul Rosas Jr. You know, truth be told, we hate to say anyone is a can or anyone's a jobber, but they brought this kid in to fight an opponent who was clearly mismatched, even though he was like 10 years older or some shit. Have any fights on the Raul Rosas fight? Any thoughts on what they're doing with this kid, Jess? Just give me some general thoughts on this.
His UFC stuff that they kind of do, the tournament that he won, he looked impressive. And again, you're going against guys more around your skill set. And I don't believe that age necessarily has anything to do with how you win fights. It just means that if you start earlier, it just means you can prolong your career longer than a guy who starts at 25, 26. So young Rojas Jr. is starting at 18 years old. Youngest fighter to ever win. I believe he's the youngest fighter to ever win his first ever debut fight. He looked good. He was very impressive. He's got a very solid skill set. The wrestling is there. He showed off a little bit of striking, but the fight wasn't long to begin with. He basically got the guy down on the ground, just out-muscled him, and just put on a nasty face crank. And we don't see people tap out from that very often. It's something that hurts for sure. I mean, I know I've been in one before, like just training.
It's not going to put you to sleep. It's just going to hurt a lot.
It hurts. It's very uncomfortable. But generally speaking, they're looking for a way to get under the chin. Again, don't want to use the word jobber. I agree with you. But this was about as close to that as they could possibly get. They found a guy who had a few fights under his belt. He was older. The guy shit talked his way through the prelims and through the weigh-ins and all that stuff. And that was a good lead up, you know, nothing too crazy, just a little bit of, you know, I'm older, I'm better than you, I've been in the game longer than you, that kind of stuff. Young Rojas Jr. just went in there and did what he had to do. He out-wrestled, he out-muscled, and then he ended up getting that nasty face crank.
Interested in seeing what they do with this kid. They clearly have stock invested in him. Is he going to be more of the Sugar Sean O'Malley, where you give him 2 years to really kind of figure it out and then give him top flight competition? Or do we do more of a Sage Northcutt, where we just start, or even someone else who's on this card, a Darren Till, where you just start throwing him to the Lions early and we see how that ends? This kid is so young, which is what I will be saying this when I talk about this kid for the next 4 years. Will he be in the UFC for the next 4 years is the true test, right? Because it's a combination of things, and not to spend too much time on this specific fight, but when you're 18, so many things happen in your life. So many challenges, I guess you would say, maturity challenges, things like that.
You can even go as far as his body. He hasn't even technically grown into and body.
Yeah, there are so many positives and negatives here with the next 4 years with this kid. But I mean, you see some, I don't want to say greatness, because greatness is, you know, you want to reserve greatness for the true greats, right? But I see it like you see some upside, a ton of upside, if you will. But, you know, you also see he's 18. So, I really, truly want to revisit this in 2 years. I don't know if I even want to wait for it, but 2 years. Let's see. In 2 years, this kid's probably going to have another four, possibly six fights, depending on how much he fights, depending on how healthy he stays and all that. So I want to see where he's at then. You know, is he 5-1? Is he 4-2? Has he ran into those hurdles that you're going to run into? Time will tell. But I'm intrigued and I'm interested. Jess, we're going to hop right into the main event here, right to the main card, if you will. We both love Bryce Mitchell. We both thought that this would be a tough fight, but a winnable fight. Boy, were we wrong. Ilya Topuria came in and it just looked like a bigger, stronger, faster, hungrier dog. Give me some thoughts on this fight, Jess.
Two things. I agree with you. Topuria came in just a hungrier guy. He physically looked bigger. And Bryce Mitchell is not, you know, he's not a big dude. He's not ever going to be cut and just shredded. He's not swole by any means. He's country, you know, a country boy tough, I guess, if you want to put it that way. I think that he would appreciate that saying. Topuria came in, showed off some superior striking, just looked lightning quick on his feet, was able to get the strong finish. I mean, I don't think the fight was more than like, you know, what, like a minute and a half, 2 minutes long, something like that. It was pretty quick. Mitchell got rocked pretty quick. Second thing I want to mention is I do enjoy Bryce Mitchell as a fighter. Outside of that, his own personality and everything is a little bit outside of who I would hang out with on a normal basis. But as a fighter, I enjoy him. He's got the correct skill sets. But I think that his devotion to his team and camp may be hindering his further evolution in this sport.
That's an interesting take. You know, this is being said about Teofimo Lopez, boxer I mentioned earlier, where you go, okay, maybe he's reached, you know, his peak here at this specific gym, and maybe it's time for him to move on to a different gym where the challenges will be different and he's not sparring and seeing the same thing every day for 3 months, 6 months, 12 months. I'm interested more in seeing what they do with Topuria. I'm probably butchering his name again, but this kid has a lot of upside, a lot of power, was able to wrestle with Mitchell, which is Mitchell's real, skill set, if you will, and just looked fucking impressive. And I'm really interested in seeing what they do with this kid. 13-0, nothing to joke about here. So we'll see, and we'll see what happens with Bryce. You know, I agree with you again. He probably has to go to a camp where he can just tighten up his boxing defense here, striking defense. Darren Till, listen, is he on an official losing streak? Shout out to Darren Till for getting that tattoo halfway covered up. Like, in the way that he explained it, you know, he was at, like, he's in a really weird place in his life when he got that tattoo, and he regrets it, and he's laying with his new girlfriend, and she's got to see the old girlfriend because she lays on that side of the bed. It's just a mess. This was a fun fight, and man, let me tell you, Duplessis, he really reminds me of the throwback 2005, 2008 guys at this weight division. Jess, give me some thoughts on this fight.
Till to me looked the best I've seen him in probably 2 years, if not longer. And that's basically because he's not fought in a while anyway. I don't think he fought at all last year. He tried and then he hurt his knee and all that kind of stuff. So Till looked different mentally. He looked better, and that's a good sign, because I had been tweeting out, like, mentally, like, that's one thing that Darren Till's been the weakest at. It's not his body, it's not his skill set, it's in his head. When he starts to lose, he kind of goes downhill quick. When he can't control his opponent, he goes downhill real quick. When the trash talk is starting, he gets a little too wrapped up into that, and I don't know what his life is like. Maybe he's a party guy, who knows, but I feel like he's straightened out a lot of things in his life. And you could see it mentally in the cage that night. He looked sharper. Obviously, that first round is not what I'm talking about.
Yes.
Where he got teed off on for basically 5 minutes. But
it was a weird round. It was a very bad round for him, but just a weird round.
It was one of the worst rounds he's probably ever had in his MMA history. It was a bad round, but he came back strong. And see, that's the difference that I saw. The Darren Till of the past couple 3 years would have just floundered and just been beaten quickly in that second round. He still tried to fight back. He did fight back. He pushed Duplessis to a point where he's probably never even been before, and just really put a lot together. And I was super proud to see Darren Till finally put some things together. This is going to go down as a loss, obviously. But I don't think it's something that he can be ashamed of at the end of the day. I think that it's something that he and his camp need to be proud of, because of how he fought through the adversity of just that absolutely horrendous first round to come back, push Duplessis, who is a brilliant fighter in his own right. And that guy's got a hell of a career ahead of him as well. Got to fix the gas tank a little bit, kind of shorted out there late in the game.
Those muscles, man, all those muscles. And that's what I'm talking about.
Like Joe Rogan said, you know, you got all those muscles, the blood's got to pump faster, man.
It's that big weight cut combined with just absolutely pushing for the finish in that first round.
He was huge. And even with Duplessis, it looked like there was a little bit of, you know, he was a little, upset that he couldn't get the finish. You know, I think it bothered him. And then, you know, again, the mental game is so tough. You have to be on top of it. You have to be aware of everything that's going on in your head in order to perform, whether it's on a field, a court, or in a cage. You have to be aware of what's going on in your head. And you saw Till get stronger moving forward, and Duplessis kind of weaken, gas tank out a little bit. Ended up getting the win, which is huge for him. But again, I can't say enough about Darren Till and that he fought through just to get to the point where he was in that fight. It was to me, it was a very, very fun and entertaining fight.
Yeah, fun, entertaining. And as always, I want to see what they do with Till next. And I want, anytime you come off of a fight and go, man, I'm interested in seeing what they do with both these guys next. We're going the right way. For the moment, it just seemed like Till went full Homer Simpson defense, got his ass whipped the first round, and then was making that comeback in the second round, landing big strikes, letting his hands go, letting his sticks go. With the combination of Duplessis looked tired, like, oh, man, he really emptied the tank looking for that finish, which is fair. But came around to the third round till, you know, the takedown came. Till had a really difficult time once he hit this back in that third round. Both guys were tired, and Duplessis was just able to get the finish. So
I saw a lot of people on Twitter talking about how Darren Till's been in the game this long and still can't figure out, you know, how to play, you know, defense against wrestlers.
At
that point in time, I believe firmly with you what you just said. Both these guys were dead. They were gassed. When you're on your back at that point in time, you're just trying to catch breathers. You're not thinking about getting up and fighting through stuff. You're just trying to get your breath back in your body. And that, I think, added on to Darren Till's problems at that point in time.
We hear this argument all the time, and we see this one out of every seven or eight fighters. Man, if there was a 175-pound division, man, if there was a 177-pound division, this guy would fucking dominate. Because he's clearly got issues fighting guys that, you know, what is he, 170 or whatever? He's middleweight, right? So what is that, 185?
Yeah, 180,
185. So if he and Duplass even said after the fight, man, he's just too small for this weight class. Like, if the guy you're fighting is telling you that, that's a hint, man. He's doing you a favor. But he just can't make 170. You know, it's just not in his physical to make 170. And again, one out of every seven or eight fighters, you see this, man. And this is why, shout out to whatever Khabib's organization was, where they're like, nah, we'll just make a bunch of different weight classes up that the UFC won't, because we want to see these fights. So here's a 175, here's a 195, here's a 150. Let's just throw a bunch of weight classes out there. So again, hopefully, in a perfect world, Till finds a fantastic dietitian and he just goes incredibly disciplined and can make 170. Maybe Till's had that moment. Maybe Till's already done all that in his career. Went, yeah, man, you know what? I did all that. I starved myself. It didn't fucking work. I just didn't have my pop at 170. I didn't like it. It didn't work for me. I don't know. But he's just at that weird weight where it ain't working at 185. He's never gonna be out inside of that top 10.
If Anthony Rumble Johnson, God rest his soul, can do it, Darren Till can do it. I think
of Rumble. There's a bunch of guys that you can throw in there where you go, man, if they just had that weight class. All right, Jess, let's keep it moving. I don't want to spend a ton of time on this fight because it was a replacement fight. Robbie Lawler dropped. Murano came in. Murano hurt Porzingis, our boy, a few times in this fight. You cannot tell me different. I seen my dude wobbling. Yo, shout out to Murano, who just went, you know what, man? I'm just going to play the fucking sneaky sly. I'm hurt. And then I just throw big-ass right-hand bombs. I'm at a weird weight, so I'm not worried about a weight cut. I'm just going to fucking let my hands go. And it almost worked, Jess. I'm telling you, he almost knocked Porzingis out in this fight. Give me some thoughts on this fight.
Came in like, you know, basically he had nothing to lose. Even if he got pounded out, like even if he lost bad, and he did, I mean, it has no barring on his career or where it's going. He's still going to get fights. He's doing the UFC a favor, man. You do Dana a favor and you're going to get rewarded. Like he's got fights lined up. I know it. Yep. He came in, he played sneaky, he did wobble Ponzinibbio a couple times. Ponzinibbio is a big guy. He for that weight class, he's a big dude. Another one of those just very cut, you know, big, strong guys. He throws hard. Everything he throws is hard. He rarely sets things up. It's just like, I'm going to come at you. And that almost played against him, against Murano, who played that defense well. He said, hey, man, if he's going to charge at me like a dumb bull every single time, I'm just going to come and wing some shots. Almost worked. Put on an exciting fight for as long as it lasted. Ponzinibbio ends up getting the TKO, I believe it was, is what they considered it. He's going to move on. Murano's going to end up getting fights. Again, I thought it was an entertaining and fun fight. I enjoyed it.
We talk about it on the show weekly. When you take a fight short notice, it is always a win-win scenario, even if you get knocked out in a few minutes, because you're doing Dana a favor, you're doing yourself a favor, and the fights will always be there. You're guaranteed at least another fight or two, no matter what. All right, Jess, let's keep it moving here. Let's step over to the co-main event here. The most controversial guy on the card here. He stirred up MMA Twitter because there are a lot of people that want to defend Ariel. And nothing wrong with that. I love Ariel. I believe you love Ariel, too. Fought Gordon. Was it Jared? I'm already forgetting Gordon's
first name. Jared Gordon.
I'm a terrible human being. What can I say? Jared Gordon, Patty Pimblett. Let's just talk the fight here, Jeff. We can talk the semantics after, but give me your thoughts on this fight.
First of all, I want to shout out Ariel because he's hashtag Bill's Mafia. I love you, Ariel.
Oh, there it is. You guys stick together.
This fight was good. I mean, I know that a lot of people kind of trashed on this fight. Like, I don't think it was near as bad as what MMA Twitter is making it out to be. Both guys had their shots. It went, you know, all rounds. Both men didn't really hold a lot back. I didn't see any, like, you know, real gassed out moments. Pimblett wasn't able to get the finish. And the fact is that Jared Gordon's a tough ass motherfucker. He's a tough guy. I said it last week. He is a tough SOB. You're not just going to go in there and beat the shit out of Jared Gordon. It's not going to happen. And Pimblett to me showed that he's got some toughness. He's got some rawness still. Gordon was also controlling most of the fight until the later round. And then he ended up kind of like almost playing it short, like just going for the win instead of going for the, you know, the actual win. He was just going for the points. He thought that he had it set up, and then it just didn't end up that way. If you want to argue semantics about like judging and what, who judged this and who judged that and the scores and all that, you can go ahead and do that, because that's your prerogative. That's your opinion. You're due for that. I'm just going to leave it at this. Neither man really like enticed me to think that they have a lot more than what they showed in the cage that night.
Yeah.
I think that Jared Gordon is a tough guy. I think that he's always going to hang tough in all fights that he has for the rest of his UFC career. Paddy Pimblett probably has the higher ceiling. That's basically based off of like the merchandising that the UFC can do from this guy.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean,
you know, he's the next big Euro guy, you know, like that's what people want him to be. They kind of want him to be the next Conor McGregor. Pimblett, I think, looks uncomfortable trying to play that role, to be honest. It doesn't look natural for him, because every time I've seen interviews and everything, like off fight interviews, he's such a humble, nice guy. He just kind of like has fun. And then when he's in front of a UFC camera, he's like sitting there trying to talk shit and do all this other stuff. Looks super uncomfortable, almost a little bit scripted for that guy. I'm looking forward to what happens to Paddy a little bit more than Jared. I think Jared just gets put into another rando fight, one that he could probably win. Pimblett is the one that I'm interested in because, A, I don't think that he's ready for top 15 competition. Mm-hmm. That division is a cutthroat division, and I would hate to see him take on a top 15. Even a top 10 guy would destroy him. I don't think that he can beat anybody in the top 10. Top 15 is going to be super tough. I just don't think that he's there yet, but I feel like the UFC is going to kind of push for it.
I know. I think you posted it on Twitter, but I can't remember off the top of my head. So please refresh my memory. Did you score the fight for Paddy or for Gordon?
I scored it for Gordon.
Okay,
I thought Jared Gordon had done enough to win that fight.
Do you see this the scoring similar, not necessarily the same, but similar to the Sugar Sean versus Peter Yan fight?
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
very,
too.
Very, very similar.
Me
very
too.
Similar.
I, you know, to copy Dana's line, don't leave it to the judges. And again, we've said it on the show for X amount of years. I scored the fight for Gordon. I felt the same way in this fight that I did with the Yan fight, where how do you score a fight? And I was scoring Gordon coming forward and being more aggressive. And the third round, I pretty much gave it to Gordon just on the cage control. For some reason, we've been told X amount of years that cage control is important. Even if he just laid on top of Paddy for a half of a round, he still laid on top of him. Paddy couldn't get him off of him. That means he was doing something right, and Paddy was doing something wrong. I hear the half-point system arguments. I get it. That's never going to change. I don't believe it'll ever change, so it's kind of irrelevant. This will always happen in combat sports, where you're always going to get controversial decisions, and it is easy to start connecting dots and going, what is this judge's background? What does this judge this? Where does this go there? The sport has some true corruption, and I just mean combat sports, period. So if you were to, without even scraping the surface on the gambling stuff that Cross is involved in, right?
Ooh, yeah.
Without even scratching the surface on that, there's corruption in combat sports. You can make the argument there's corruption in all sports, right? But it really depends on how deep does it go? How many, what levels are there to this? And I don't believe there is the level of Dana going to these judges and going, hey, make sure fighter A wins by any means necessary. I would not be surprised if that was happening, I'm trying to have good faith. Maybe I'm looking at for good faith within the wrong person. But I just don't think that that's happening. I could be wrong again. I could be wrong. And maybe there's a lot more there. Maybe we have now officially reached where there is smoke, there is fire levels. But I'm not ready to go there yet. I'm always going to lean back on, hey, man, you got a close fight. Some people are going to see it differently there. All rounds were close, which is something I tweeted during this fight. They weren't absolutely one-sided. Felt the same way with Jan versus Sugar. These rounds are close. I'm giving it to this guy. Somebody gives it to the opposite guy. I'm not going to argue till I'm out of breath because they're close rounds. Not sure what they do with Patty here. I agree with a lot of what you said. I think that, again, they're trying to create new stars. Patty can be a new star, but sometimes those stars have to have mouthpieces, right? And Patty, I don't know if he has it. And I agree with you. I think that we're so used to Patty being a babyface, if you will, right? That when you see wrestling, here we go with our wrestling.
I love the wrestling reference.
That when you get all of a sudden a heel, Patty, the week of the fight, where he's just like, yeah, I'm on my own podcast and fuck Ariel and I've got Dana on. He's going to be agreeing with me. He's, you know, of course he's going to be on some fuck Ariel. And Ariel's looking to get paid and this and that. It's just almost like a, this does not compute. This isn't normal. This, as you said, this feels a little staged. This feels a little fake. And don't do that. Don't do that to us. You know what I'm saying? It's not going to work. So I don't know what they do with Patty next, other than I am in total agreement with you that he has no business fighting inside of the top 10. I know people have been posting the top 15 on the internet and marking everybody that he would lose to, with Tony Ferguson being number 15, and people going, well, trending Ferguson up versus trending down. Trending up versus trending down. But at this point, if I'm Patty's people, I bring it in and I go, hey, man, let's take 90 to 120 days here. Let's take a month off of fighting. Let's enjoy the holidays. Let's enjoy some of January. Let's maybe get out of America. I don't know. And just kind of go back, you know, to the motherland, if you will. Take it easy for a few months, or a few weeks, and just get away from all this. Get away from fighting for a minute. And then come back and see where, you know, what they want to do in regards to booking you for a fight. But what's the, you know, I don't know what the rush is to throw him in with a top 15 guy, when just like we talked about here with Rojas, they have some creative ideas with him. They have some backing that they want to push on him. They're probably in no rush to see him running there with a top 15 guy and see how that ends. So interesting to see what happens with Pimblett. I'm not sure what happens with Gordon. I wouldn't be opposed to them running it back. I don't think it'll happen, but I wouldn't be opposed to them running it back. Jess, let's hop right into the main event here. And then we'll go some football. I think we might touch on the main event of this week's show just to kind of get it out of the way, just to give some people something to bet on fight-wise. Our boy Jan Błachowicz fought Ankalaev. This, to me, was an interesting fight up until the fifth round. And much like majority of people that were watching this fight, I either started to fall asleep or just lost interest. Give me some thoughts on this fight.
So I hate to do this, but my first thought is this really what's happened to the light heavyweight division?
What have I become?
What have I become? Where's the Chuck Liddells? Where's the John Jones? Where's, you know, like there's just this just history of just dynamic light heavyweights throughout the UFC. And we're here. I mean, I honestly thought I had such high hopes for Ankalaev, to be honest. I thought Ankalaev was going to go in there and just piece Błachowicz up. I mean, I didn't see how Jan was going to win this fight. And I know Jan's got a lot of people out there backing him up.
Yeah, I picked Jan. Remember, I picked
Jan. Yeah, I just thought, man, Ankalaev's got this striking. He hits like a truck. He can grapple. If he's getting outstruck, he can grapple. Like, where did it all go? Like, what happened? Like, I understand, again, styles make fights. Sometimes styles make boring fights.
Yes.
And potentially
very important.
Potentially that is what happened in this fight. these guys were so close in skill sets, and they kind of just offset everything that they were good at.
They cross each
which,
other out.
Which ended up making the fight very slow, very low paced, very boring, if you will, especially towards the later rounds. I personally thought that Jan did enough to win. And I'm just saying, he was the champ, you know, like, or he is the champ, so like, or whatever, interim champ or whatever he is. I just thought, man, if you don't beat the guy in a fight that close, then the guy wins. Like, that's how I do things.
You're going pride rules. This is how I scored the fight. I gave Jan the first three rounds. I thought the third round was a little closer, and I thought Ankalaev made a case for winning the round at the very tail end of the round, but I still didn't give it to him. I thought Jan was clearly destroying Ankalaev's legs early and often, and there was a point, I think in the second round, where I thought Ankalaev's not going to be able to walk out of this cage. He is getting fucking teed off on, and he's doing a bad job at poker face, where you can tell the leg kicks are bothering him.
No so defense course, either.
And of course, any striker, is any great elite former champion, is going to go, all right, well, I'm just going to keep picking at your fucking legs because you're not defending them well enough. And Jan did that. Fourth round, clearly Ankalaev said, fuck this, I'm going to go Khabib, and got that takedown and just was able to stay on top, stay active, and stay grinding. Fifth round, I'm good with the 10-8 because exact same thing, but at a higher level where Jan really had no defense, was absolutely gassed. And it wasn't necessarily that Ankalaev was just laying a beat down on him as much as he was just dominating him by not letting him get up and just controlling him, smothering him. I was good with a 10-8, but again, I was kind of dozing in and out. So I wasn't like at the end of the round standing up and going 10-8. I mean, it was a weird fight. It ended weird. The vibe was weird at the end of the fight. And then Dana doesn't make it any better by just immediately going, yeah, that didn't work, dog. I'm going to go ahead and just schedule another title fight a month from now. Fucking see y'all in Brazil. Like that, the whole thing was weird. Like the
worst part is weird. Dana's okay. So you have the fight to happen, right? Like it was not the greatest fight. We've already covered that. Not the most entertaining fight. But I don't think that Ankalaev did enough to beat Jan. I think again, like I think that you have to beat the guy to be the guy. I don't think that Ankalaev did enough to do that. And then at the end of the fight, it's called a draw or a split draw, which is super weird, especially in a fight of that magnitude. I mean, it's a title fight. I believe it was an interim fight.
Yep.
And then to call it a split draw, and then literally, like you said, like what, like minutes later. Dana's like, fuck these guys. I'm taking Glover and I'm fighting. He's fighting Jamal Hill.
I'm taking Jamal Hill out of a fight.
And that
he already has
thing.
Booked with somebody and just
Anthony
really,
Smith.
Oh, listen, I'm ready to talk this. So
we have to get to that, but give me your thoughts.
We are getting way into the weeds here. So
real quick, give me your thoughts on Dana's choice of Glover and Jamal Hill.
It's just fucking weird, and it seems desperate to put a belt on somebody. Like, what's the desperation to put a belt on somebody here? And what if you fuck around and get another draw out there with that fight? Like, I don't even see Jamal Hill as like a top 3 205er, but fucking here we are. I still think that Jiří is the guy. I still think Glover and him are the fight to make. And I want to see Ankalaev versus Glover. I want to see Ankalaev versus Jiří. I want to see Jiří versus Jan. And this is not a knock on Jamal Hill. He clearly has a ton of upside, but just to throw him in here like this, I don't like it. I'm not a big fan of it. And I feel like, and to connect those dots, we all feel some empathy for Anthony Smith, who has completely made a babyface turn here on all of us. This poor guy is sitting on stage doing the ESPN broadcast, doing the post show. It's fucking way past this guy's bedtime. He's a father like the most of us here. Listen to the show. And he's told, he learns on air that the guy he's supposed to fight in a month has now been bumped into a title fight. Anthony Smith, who has done nothing wrong, now doesn't have a fight, loses his purse, which again needs to be focused on the most, loses his purse. If it gets moved 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, I don't give a fuck. He is losing a purse. And has to deal with this on air like a professional, not have a shitty attitude, not feel like he wasn't fed a shit sandwich, and continue to talk and continue to do this broadcast for an hour. This guy got dealt the absolute worst fucking hand that you could be dealt on air. And not to get too far into the weeds here, but prize fighters usually have 3, maybe 4 if they had a great year, big purse nuts that they're going to get. Those 3 or 4 purses determine their lifestyle for the goddamn year, determine their family, their wives' lifestyle. People that don't understand how fighters work, not every fighter is going to have Nike endorsements and Reebok endorsements and cool endorsements, which means they got to fucking pay bills and mortgages and car payments and all that shit, just like us. And so when you move a fighter's purse from January to February, even if you're moving it 3-4 weeks, that guy's got to go to his accounting team, which is usually his wife, and go, "Hey, babe, we've got to move shit around here because I'm not getting my big payday here in 3 or 4 weeks." Now, maybe I'm wrong and Anthony Smith is great financially and is invested properly and makes great side money, and him losing, you know, $60,000 to $120,000 payday at being moved doesn't affect him like it does majority of fighters. But I'm going to lean on the side of the shit that I'm saying is right. And you have officially fucked with this man's money. And that ain't right. That just ain't right. That didn't sit right with me. Clearly didn't sit right with him while he's on stage and Dominic Cruz is trying to console him over it. And it didn't sit right with a lot of smart MMA Twitter fans. And rightfully fucking so. Jess, we'll hit the wrap it up button on the fights and get moving to the football here. But give me some thoughts here on the way out on this.
Anthony Smith got the absolute, he got the Montreal screw job.
Yes.
Okay. He got the Montreal screw job. Let's just be real.
Badly.
He was not warned about this. He was not, Dana didn't go to him and be like, "Hey man, if shit doesn't go right in this fight, like I'm going to pull Hill. I'm going to, you know," there was no hint of what might happen. There was no heads up, Anthony Lionheart Smith. I know that you're a fan favorite and all your fights are exciting and people love to watch you and they pay your, you know, for your pay-per-views to watch you. But hey, buddy, by the way, you get nothing. And all of this played out like the fucking Truman Show in front of a fucking live camera. The audience is sitting there like, "Oh, the fighters won. Oh, shit, man." Yan and Anklev went to a split draw. "Oh, that's bullshit." Then everybody's watching these guys up front, these professionals, many who are either current or former athletes, sitting there debating and discussing and breaking down fights that they just witnessed, just to have a breaking news announcement while Anthony Smith's sitting there like, "Oh, breaking news, huh? Oh, wait, what? I know Jamahal Hill. I'm going to fight him. Wait, what?" And he had to sit there straight faced and just be like, "Well, that's interesting. Wow, I guess I don't have a fight now." And then you have Dominic Cruz, who, I mean, Cruz is like in shock. Everybody on that stage is shocked.
He's just got a panel full of people realizing that this guy just had his money fucked with.
Like, and again, prize fighting, the only reason to fight is for the prize. The prize sometimes may be a title, but 99.9% of the time it's for the money. People, they don't have a regular 9-to-5 job, and maybe some of them do, but when they fight, that's their passion. And usually when you do something that you're passionate about, you would like to get paid for it. And Anthony Smith has performed his ass off for Dana White in the UFC since he's been in the UFC fighting. And yeah, he's not been able to reach the pinnacle, but he is definitely one of the better light heavyweights in that division. And you're just going to pull the rug underneath him for a guy who doesn't even belong in the top 10. It's an absolute Montreal screw job. I wanted to see some memes or something of like Bret Hart, but with Anthony's
You want to see
face on it
Anthony Smith?
walking back, like
You want to see
spitting
Anthony
them
Smith
on Vince.
inside the ring, spitting down at Dana White, and
Yes.
going WCW with his fist?
Abso-freaking-lutely. I
That's
want this,
let's
somebody
get
needs to
that
make
done.
that meme because that's exactly what happened to Anthony Smith. That's all I got on that.
Give me some just a quick pick. I mean, 10 seconds. Jared Cannonier versus Sean Strickland. Who you got?
Cannonier. Cannonier's bigger, stronger. Strickland, I don't know how this guy keeps getting so many fights so quick. I mean, he had a bit of a run like early last year, but man, he's been super not so great in his past two or three. Cannonier, like I said, big strong guy, probably gonna win. I'm guessing a TKO. I'm gonna go third round.
I love all of that, and I am piggybacking off of that because I was thinking the same thing. Cannonier via grapple fuck later in the fight, let's say second to third round, he's going to wear Sean out and knock out a ground and pound type of knockout. Round three, you and I are in agreement there.
Correct.
Great. We did 30 minutes over a fight talk, so we went there, guys. For shout out again to our Triple OG listeners who love our fight talk. We will continue to give you combat sports, but we're hopping right into the NFL here. Yes, we got some bad
Yeah.
games. We got some good games this week. As always, we're going to start with that Thursday night game. Mr. Irrelevant and the San Francisco 49ers are a 3 to a 3.5 point favorite. They are traveling to Seattle. The Seattle Seahawks, 3 to 3.5 point. Give them. And of course, we're dealing with your favorite websites here: DraftKings, Caesar Sportsbook, FanDuel, BetMGM, a bunch of shady overseas websites as well that are giving these lines. Jess, who you got?
Not huge travel. It's not East Coast to West Coast, nothing. And to me, Seattle's trending down. Geno, a little bit more Geno of like
Coming back to Earth.
2018, coming back to Earth, Geno. And Brock Purdy may not be Joe Montana incarnate, but he's shown something that not many San Francisco 49 quarterbacks have had last couple 3 years, which is an appreciation of the deep ball. Like, he doesn't mind taking shots downfield. Kid's got a decent arm. In Iowa, he was popping off rockets all day long. And even though in the game against Tampa Bay, I feel like it was more like San Francisco's defense was elite and Tampa Bay's offense is just bottom five. Tom Brady's old as shit, like looks terrible out there. Like the wide receivers look like they're lackluster. They don't want nothing to do with the game right now. They have no real running back. Leonard Fournette's hurt all the time. I feel like he did a good job of pressing Tampa Bay's defense. And in this game, I think that we're gonna see the same thing. Seattle doesn't have a prominent defense. It can be good, but not generally speaking, it's pretty average. I think San Francisco's defense will take care of Geno. Brock Purdy will lead a couple drives down, and the San Francisco 49ers will win and cover.
Vegas is sneaky because to me this feels like a 4 point game. I like the Niners. I like the points. This will not get ugly quick. This will be a funky Thursday night game where the Niners offense is going to look out of sync. It's going to look like they have a quarterback that was drafted in the 12th round, and Seattle's gonna. We're going to see a lot of field goals. I would not be surprised if it's like 9 to 12 at halftime.
Just all field goals.
Just 9 to 12. I like
Everything.
the Niners putting at least one touchdown on the board here. I like something like 12 to 15. I'll give Seattle five field goals, 12 to 15. I like the Niners. I like the points. I'm gonna hop right to this funky ass Sunday game, and they're already getting weird. Minnesota, Vegas is all off on Minnesota, and I am picking this up right now. Because they are only a 4 point favorite versus the Indianapolis Colts coming off a bye. The Pancake Coach is back, Jess. Who you got?
Well, last week they knew something because Detroit was like 2.5 point favorites and Detroit smashed Minnesota. I don't know.
You might be right. Fuck, Minnesota's Dan, defense is shit.
Dan Campbell, you're my guy, man. I'm telling you, I want to drink.
We'll get
Dan
to
Campbell
the we got time for Lions picks. We got time for Lions picks.
Minnesota is going to win. Minnesota will cover. Indianapolis is still terrible. The Jonathan Taylor has no offensive line to run behind. I keep hearing the analysts when they talk about Indianapolis, they're like, well, if Jonathan Taylor can get going. If Jonathan Taylor, well, yeah, he can't. He has no offensive line. Can't. There's no holes. He's a fantastic running back with no way to run the ball. That team is not good. Minnesota wins. Minnesota covers.
Agreed. Love the points. Love Minnesota. This gets away from Indy late. Indy does not have the team to come back from a 10-point deficit. And I like Minnesota by at least a touchdown, if not 10. Again, Minnesota's defense is very bad, but I don't think Indy is going to be exposing them. Fun game here, the Cleveland Browns. They are a 3 to 2.5 point favorite at home versus the Ravens. When I see that, it makes me wonder if Lamar is coming back. Jess, who you got?
Whether Lamar comes back this week or not, I heard that he's going to be out a couple more games.
Okay. All right, so he's
but
out.
But I still think that the Ravens have enough. The quarterback doesn't really have to be Lamar. And now they can run a more consistent Harbaugh offense where it's basically like run, pass.
Yep.
They can do that now because they have a quarterback who basically just needs to hand the ball off and make little short drop-off passes. And so that's what they will do. The Ravens will win. The Ravens will cover.
There's your first upset. I like that. I don't have the balls to take it. This is going to be another hard – it's going to feel like 1985 in the stadium, just a lot of running. We're going to have fucking 80 combined attempts, 40 on each side, 25 from fucking Big Chubb, 15 from Hunt. Don't hit that blunt. 15 from whoever the fuck Baltimore's backup running back is.
DK Dobbins is back. Also.
Oh, that's interesting.
Dobbins is back and healthy. So
you're right, though. Hunley just has to not make mistakes. And they'll be in this game. I like Cleveland. The 3, if this feels like a field goal game, I don't want to push. So I like Cleveland to win. I like Baltimore to cover because this feels like a field goal game to me. I'm going to save Miami. I'm going to skip right by Miami. Let's hop right into a little bit of fun, a little bit of Detroit love, a little bit of Campbell love. I feel like, listen, every time we do a Wednesday show, we show this Coach Campbell a little bit more love. They are a fucking pick 'em. They are a -1. They're a +1. This number is all over the board. Vegas wants no fucking part of this. Offshore wants no part of this, Jess. The New York Football Jets are at home. Who you got?
Man, I'm going to tell you what. I just watched the Jets Bills last week. That Jets defense is outrageously tough.
Sauce Gardner's a mother.
But here's the thing. As with the Bills game, the Bills just needed a couple plays to slip through. They made those plays. They win the game. I'm going to take the Detroit Lions because they do have some very explosive players on that team. Jared Goff has been playing. Baby Hands have been playing fantastic football. Not many turnovers, making the right plays, making the right reads, handing the ball off, no fumbles. He's doing a fantastic job at being a game-managing quarterback, and they are starting to get a little bit fired up, a little bit pumped up.
Yes.
And Campbell's out there doing 30 to 50 push-ups at practice.
Yes. He's curls just, for the girls and trying
curls
guys.
For the girls. Oh, man, it's crazy right now in Detroit. He's got this team believing, hey, we're not that far out of playoff contention, guys. We win out, we get into the playoffs. He's got this team believing it. I think that even though the Jets defense is outrageously good, I think that a couple plays will slip through. Detroit's going to end up fucking around and winning this game.
Jesse, is this the first time in 15 weeks that we both picked Detroit to win a goddamn game?
Yes, it has.
Oh, well, I think I've listen, either this is the money lock of the Stone Cold lock of the century of the week or an absolute jinx, but I'm going Detroit. I like Detroit. I like the points. I'm echoing everything that Jesse is saying. That offense feels like the fucking 93 Rams. And they find ways to get in the end zone. The 99 Rams, rather. They just find ways to get in the end zone. And I like Detroit. I like something like 17-20 Detroit. The Philadelphia Eagles continue to steamroll teams, continue to punch teams in the mouth. They're a 9-point favorite versus Chris W. Powers, Chicago Bears. And that is across the board. Who you got?
Jeez. In the NFL right now, I firmly believe that the Philadelphia Eagles are the team to beat. They're the best team in the football. Jalen Hurts is playing just out of his mind good. A.J. Brown, probably the best receiver in the game right now. Not like overall, but just like right now as we sit. The guy's almost unstoppable. When they mix in the run, they're even tougher to beat. And then if you look across to the other side and you have that big-ass defense staring you down, you've got the best secondary in football, possibly the best defensive line in football, and they just get after everybody. So I, as much as I hate the points, I'm going to take it and say that Philly wins and Philly covers.
Can I tell you who I thought the first Jalen Hurts would be?
Tell me.
Cardinal Jones.
Oh, yeah.
Listen, I can't get them all right. I love that. you know, the Hurts thing right now to me is a real anomaly because I heard Keyshawn Johnson on the radio this morning saying that every team is going to try and draft quarterbacks more like Jalen Hurts. And I get that. But I think that you get a Michael Vick type of guy every 10 or 12 years, and the Eagles just lucked out and scored them. I like the Eagles this week. I say it begrudgingly. I like the points. I don't want to call them the best team in football just because I'm an absolute Philadelphia hater, but, but they might be there. Let me tell you, they're fucking close. Maybe I'll say it next week. If they got to blow out, like, can I wait till week 19? Eagles win, Eagles cover. Just I want to spend a few moments on this game because I'm intrigued by the Mariota thing. Not necessarily the game, but the 4.5 seems to be the number across the board for the New Orleans Saints. They're a favorite versus the Atlanta Falcons, who are starting I believe he's a rookie quarterback.
He's rookie, Desmond Ridder.
So let's start here, Jess. Who you got?
Well, I can understand why they're the favorites. Atlanta's moving away from Marcus Mariota, and they're going to put in a guy who's never taken a snap in the NFL. It's very difficult. It's a difficult time to come in and play. I mean, if you're an offensive lineman, it's difficult, but you can get around it by, you know, just being the bigger guy and pushing people over. When you're the quarterback, you have 1,500 things to do on the field all at one time, and you have to manage every single thing that you do and make sure that it works. And it's just difficult when I think it was off-season training camp is when he got hurt. And then now, week 15, he's coming in to make his first official start. And practice time is not the same as playing time. So who's Atlanta playing?
New Orleans.
New Orleans. I like the Saints. I like him in this game. I don't like Saints very much. I like him in this game, taking on a rookie quarterback who's never taken a snap in the NFL. And the Saints, they still have some marquee guys. Mm-hmm. The defense is
still
not
fighting for
the defense is not terrible. The Saints do have something to fight for. I mean, I guess the Falcons do too, honestly. The NFC South is absolutely miserable. Like, you got the Saints and the Falcons, the Bucks and Panthers, and it's bad all across the board. I mean, one of those teams could mess around and win 7 games and somehow manage to get in the playoffs. I don't know. But I like the Saints in this game. They just got a little bit more to play for than Atlanta does.
I like the Saints. I like the points. Saints defense is great. Saints offense is not so great. I believe that the Saints are going to make a push here, and we're going to get to that week 17, week 18, and the Saints and Tampa Bay are going to be fighting for that NFC South. Just not to spend too much time on it here, but the Marcus Mariota story to me was very intriguing. Basically was told that they were going to start Reader for the rest of the year, and would he like to play backup quarterback for the rest of the year? He said, I have an injury. I should probably be getting this operated on. And they said, that's cool. We still want you to play backup quarterback for the rest of the year. Fuck that surgery. And he opted out. He said, no, I'm gonna walk away from the team and I'm going to get this surgery. Any thoughts on this, Jess?
I honestly, I don't know who to blame. Like, I really want to put all the blame on the Atlanta Falcons organization.
Yeah.
Just mismanaging players, mismanaging money, like allocating funds to this and that and the other, and where they're putting players at on the field and what they're doing. Marcus Mariota, I watched this guy play every snap basically at the University of Oregon. He never complained. He played with a busted up shoulder and a busted up elbow before. He's fought through the pain. He's done it. He's 100%, 110% team guy. Everybody in every locker room he's ever played for absolutely loves Marcus. It doesn't matter if it was Tennessee, the Raiders, or here. He's a fun guy to be around. He's a great person. And he's not a terrible quarterback, okay? He's very manageable. The Falcons are what? I believe 5-8 right now. Mm-hmm. He's got 2,200 yards, 15 touchdowns. Yeah, his picks are a little – he's about average for what he is. Like, the stats are – they're no better or no worse. So what is Atlanta really doing? Is it so bad? Like, do you feel like you have a shot with a quarterback that is just now coming in? You think that you have a shot at just winning out with this rookie quarterback? I mean, should we go back and talk about Kenny Pickett and the season that he's had over in Pittsburgh?
We got time. We'll talk about that.
But I'm just saying, like, rookie quarterbacks, just Peyton Manning's rookie year was not very good. Like, let's just be real. Desmond Ridder is not going to come in and blow the roof off anybody, okay, and take the Atlanta Falcons to the Super Bowl. So why don't you do the right thing? Stick with the guy that's stuck with your organization and just let him finish his season. And then at the end of it all, if you don't want him to be the guy, then you give him the option. Hey, do you want to be the backup next year? No? Okay, then we'll release you or trade you, whatever the contract situation is there, and we'll give you that much. Just that's called being a fundamentally run sound organization.
Yeah, they did the Atlanta dropped the ball here. Atlanta dropped the ball. And where I think they dropped the ball is by saying exactly what they said. Hey, listen, we're going to run this kid. Would you like to back him up? No. Okay, well, then here we are. Nothing wrong with Mariota betting on himself and saying, I would much rather get this operation, heal up, and have the opportunity to possibly start for another team next year or back up at another organization. Atlanta clearly has made their decision that Mariota is not the guy, and that's okay. So let's keep it moving. Let's call it an amicable split, and both teams walk away. Everyone walk away happy. There's no reason to make this ugly or messy, which what I feel like Atlanta's doing now. And again, shout out to Mariota for betting on himself, because at some point you got to go, yeah, you know what? I think I can still be a starting quarterback in this league, and I'd much rather heal up and give it a shot next year at a different organization than sit here and back up a rookie quarterback. He gets hurt, and I got to roll my ass out there on a bad leg. I'm not doing it. I think he did the right thing. Jess, let's quickly shoot through this. What we got? 10 a.m. games. Okay, we got three 10 a.m. games left. I want to quickly shoot through two of them. Pittsburgh, Carolina. Carolina is a 2.5-point favorite at home. I was not ready for that. Versus the Steelers. Who you got?
I'm going to go upset number two. I think Pittsburgh wins and they cover the points. Yeah. I can see it being a 3-6 point Pittsburgh win late.
Yeah, this feels like 17-13 Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
Pittsburgh's just got to not turn the ball over and not let Carolina score points. I mean, I guess that's kind of how football works. But
Sam Darnold is not going to roll Pittsburgh.
Not Pittsburgh's defense.
Yeah, not on Pittsburgh's defense.
Pittsburgh figures out a way to put up 17, and Carolina struggles at home. I like Pittsburgh in the points. I agree with you. Kansas City, and I believe as of right now, looking at the board here, they are the biggest favorite of the week. They are a 14-point favorite on the road versus the Houston Texans. Jess, quickly, what you got?
I believe they were the biggest favorites last week, and they failed to cover that. There's something going on in Kansas City. I don't know what it is. I don't want to, like, sound the alarm in Chiefville, okay? But, like, I believe last week Mahomes, Mr. You know, Perfect, threw three interceptions last week. This is a guy who's just been, you know, built up, and I've built him up. I love Patrick Mahomes. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you. I think he's a fantastic quarterback. If it wasn't Josh Allen, I would love to have a Patrick Mahomes. You know what I mean? Who wouldn't? But they're all fallible people. We're human beings are fallible. On the football field, things happen. The Kansas City Chiefs are making a weird time to start trending somewhat down, like 4 weeks before the playoffs start. It's not a good look. I don't like the points. I watched Houston put up a fight against your Dallas Cowboys, I believe it was last week.
That's accurate.
They fought hard, they fought adamantly. Again, we love the most lovable losers in the NFL. They will lose to Kansas City, but I don't like the points.
Yeah, if anything, this might be the Kansas City gets back on track game, but I'm in agreement with you. Houston's gonna put up a fight. I think 10 feels a little bit better. If it was Houston 10, Houston plus 10, I'd be like, all right, plus 14, two touchdowns is a lot in this league. And Kansas City, for whatever reason right now, it just, as you said, doesn't feel like they're operating full cylinders. So I like Kansas City to win. I like Houston to cover. And we have now reached our teams here. Jess, we'll start with you. The Miami Dolphins are a 7 to 7.5 point dog versus Buffalo. You once again were recklessly tweeting during the Buffalo game. I said, Jess, you got to slow down. You got to breathe a little bit.
It's good to have somebody on the other end, really, a back end. Because
you weren't firing coaches like you were the past 12 weeks, but. Jess, let's start here. You gave us a few thoughts here. Give us some scratch and surface thoughts on Buffalo's performance last week and who you got.
When I first was watching the game, I was obviously tweeting recklessly with abandon and no purpose whatsoever except just hate spewing. Like, I can't believe Buffalo's, like, fucking around.
We should be winning by 100.
We should be winning by 100 points right now. I did not take into effect that it was, like, 13 degrees outside, snowing off and on, a little bit of sleet and rain during the game. The ball was slippery, and Buffalo's game plan was basically to outlast the New York Jets, and they did. So, you know, I'm happy about that. Buffalo gets the win. There's little excuses that I can use in my brain as to why Buffalo didn't put up 45 points, except for the fact that no team averages 45 points a game in an NFL season, because the NFL is a very tough league. Even the Houston Texans kind of surprised the Dallas Cowboys last week. So anything can happen. Buffalo gets the win. I'm moving on. I expect this game to be almost identical to the New York Jets game. Tyreek Hill is banged up. Tua threw for like 50 yards total last week. I don't know what's happening over there. I tweeted out to some Miami Dolphins fans, you people sound like me when I'm tweeting about Josh Allen and the Bills. You guys are full tilt. Like, I've heard fans say, fuck the Dolphins, fuck Tua, fuck Mike McDaniels. Like, this team's shit. I've never seen anything like this before. This is crazy. Look, man, Tua is in a perfect spot in Miami. And as long as Mike McDaniels is the head coach, Tua needs to be the starting quarterback of that football team. And he will flourish under Mike McDaniels. Mike McDaniels, as I tweeted out earlier this week, first-year head coach, sometimes they can surprise the NFL because the NFL doesn't know what they're looking for. Well, now there's film. We're 14 weeks deep. People know what Mike McDaniels does best. People know what he doesn't do very well. And it was just the Chargers just picked that apart. they didn't allow the big splash plays. There were also there was the injury late to Tyreek Hill. I don't think that he ended up coming back into the game. Tua had an absolute just shit show of a football game.
Yeah, he had his worst game.
Things happen in the NFL, man. Again, I think that the NFL is just kind of caught up to what Miami does. In this game, it will be in Buffalo. There's expected to be 6 to 7 inches of snow on the ground. It's going to be 26 degrees. The game is going to be sloppy. There will be turnovers on both sides of the football. So, Buffalo fans, don't freak out. I know I'm talking to myself
basically right now. Yes, you are.
There will be turnovers on both sides of the ball. And I think that in the end, Buffalo wins like 23-13, something like that.
Wow, you like the points too. Yeah. I like Buffalo to win. I don't like the points this week. This is an AFC East battle. These guys are pushing for the division and a playoff spot. These two teams have played each other, so they know each other. And I like Buffalo to win by a field goal, maybe 4 points. This is going to be another. Jess, please put the phone down. Nail biter where it feels like absolute doom and gloom. So we got about 2 minutes left, and all of a sudden Buffalo goes from down 3 to up 4 because Josh Allen hits a fucking absolute deal for dime laser type throw, and we keep it moving. I like Buffalo. I like Miami to cover. And I think, you know, saying it, no disrespect, of course, Jess, wouldn't surprise me if Miami pulled this game out. Tua's not going to be inaccurate this many games in a row. Might have been that east to west travel. Might have just been every quarterback has a shit game, and that was his. But I still like Buffalo. I'm not picking any upsets here.
No, it's going to be hard enough to deal with the snow for both teams.
Yeah.
The Buffalo Bills head coach, Sean McDermott, had a lot of people fielding him questions about, well, how does it feel to have the snow advantage? And he goes, does it look like we practice in 6 inches of snow every day?
Yeah. No,
I think it's pretty even on both sides of the field.
They're going to fucking plow that field just like every
exactly.
Every field. All right, Dallas Cowboys. Cowboys quarter time was not the best Cowboys performance last week. Not sure if it was a play to the other team's level. Not sure if it was just a Dak couldn't get it going thing. But it just wasn't clicking last week. They did pull it off despite being double-digit favorites. They were able to win by 4 at the end despite Justin Von Doom, to the demise of Justin Von Doom, who tweeted me with about 5 minutes left in this game, the Texans are going to lose this game. I watch this every week. And he was right. He's right. The Dallas Cowboys this week, the numbers cooled off. They're not enormous favorites this week. They're traveling to Jacksonville. They're playing my boy Trevor Lawrence. 4 points. I see 4.5 at some sites, but we'll keep it at 4, Jess. Who you got?
I believe Trevor Lawrence last week had the best game of possibly his career.
High numbers.
Just stretched the field using both his legs and his arm. Everything that happened last week for Jacksonville was why they drafted this kid. This is a different beast. When you have a linebacker on the other side of the ball that can run faster than your wide receivers.
Yes.
It's a different animal. Trevor Lawrence is going to find ways to keep the game interesting, but Micah Parsons will not be denied in this game. I'm putting his over under sacks at 2. I would take the over. I think Micah Parsons is going for a three sack game. The rest of the defensive line is going to eat, and all Dallas has to do is make a few explosive plays. I'm not sure if their new pickup, T.Y. Hilton, is going to play in this game or not. It'd probably be more of a next week thing. Let him catch up on the playbook a bit. But again, Dallas has made the right moves. Everybody, at least as far as I know, is healthy or to fairly healthy. And Dax, last week's game against Houston was basically the lovable loser saying, everybody doubts us. Why can't we be the Washington Commanders? And they just came up a little bit short. So they played their asses off, and they lost to a very talented Dallas Cowboys team. I like Dallas. And, dude, 4 points, I love the points. I think Dallas wins by at least 6, if not more.
That, I think the game that we were looking for last week, where it's like, oh, the Cowboys are just going to house them. I think that happens this week. I think this gets away from Jacksonville early, and this ends up being something like a 17-point win for Dallas. I think this gets away from Jacksonville early because of all of the elements that you just mentioned here. All right. We have a less than a handful of games here, Jess, and I feel like we're going long, so let's try and knock these out. Arizona Cardinals. You know what I did want to touch on, though. Listen, I'm going to rewind a little bit, though. You are right. The T.Y. Hilton signing, I think, is big for, I don't want to say a handful of reasons, but maybe one or two. One of them is you just need that possession receiver late in the playoff game that you know can make a big catch on third down. And I'm not talking about going 25 yards on third down. I'm talking about going 6 or 7 yards on third and three. As long as T.Y. Hilton can be an elite or somewhere even close, maybe I'm fucking blowing the guy right now, just an above average possession receiver and a third option for Dak when Dak needs him, he will be enormous. Second thing I wanted to touch on here, Jess, this almost feels like there's no chance they sign Odell. And I just saw earlier this morning that Dallas was still favored to sign Odell. I don't think it happens. I think if it was going to happen, it would have happened by now. And when I hear Odell saying things like, well, I'm really a big game player. I'm really trying to be in this year's big games. Brother, you got a Super Bowl ring because you played in a quarter of a Super Bowl. That doesn't equate to big games. That equates to a big quarter. He had a great first quarter. It was incredible. Got a touchdown.
Would have been MVP. He was my MVP pick.
But doesn't equate. It just doesn't. I'm sorry. Who do the Bills bring in again? I'm sorry.
The Bills. Jeff. So along with the T.Y. Hilton thing, which I just want to say, I think it's a big deal. Hilton is no longer, you know, the top 10 receiver that he was at one point in time when he was playing with Andrew Luck.
And wasn't he playing with Manning too?
And he might have caught Manning. It might have been at the end of Manning's career, but I know he played most football with Luck, maybe a little bit with Manning as well. He had some just Hall of Fame quarterbacks out there. But so he's had a long career, and I think that he did it right. He sat there and waited like a year and, you know, maybe 16 months, something like that, and said, hey, man, I'm not playing football until the right thing comes along. And then Dallas comes down. They need a possession guy. They know that Hilton's not going to go for 115 yards a game. But if you can get him the ball, like you said, like on a 3rd and 7, you know, and he's going to run the routes correctly. He's not going to misread stuff. He's a true professional. He's going to go out there and perform. He's going to pick up some of those really needed yards that Dak can just dump off and then wait for the explosive plays to be with Lamb and Gallup and all those other guys they have. Buffalo did the exact same thing that Dallas did. They went and got their possession guy back, which is Cole Beasley. Cole Beasley, obviously, with all the weird, like, anti-Semitic things and, like,
hated Buffalo,
got a lot of stuff going on.
Who cares how much he hates Buffalo? Can't even catch on 3rd and 7.
He did go through this weird, like, little, like, phase where he was like, I hate Buffalo. I hate everybody there. Everybody sucks. And then today
it's cold. It sucks.
Today at his press conference, I watched it, of course, and yeah, Cole was very humble.
Walked that shit back real quick.
He walked it back real quick, said, hey, look, man, I was going through some stuff. Some people were talking about my family. It really pissed me off, and I just went off the deep end. Bill's Mafia talking shit, and I lost my shit. Words were exchanged. He goes, I wish that it wouldn't have ended like that. He said when he went to Tampa Bay, he knew it wasn't going to be the right fit. He said, I really wanted to be in Buffalo. He said, I took some time off to be with my family. I was training every day. He personally called Brandon Bean and said, Brandon, I want to come back. What do I need to do to come back? Brandon said, you know, you're on board. Let's do this. He brought him in. So he did the thing. He did the thing that professional athletes are supposed to do when they're trying to preserve their careers and reignite a fire in a fan base. He said all the right things. He was very polite and very humble. And the best thing is again, Josh Allen has his reliable slot guy back. Isaiah McKenzie has been a garbage heap this year. Like, you have like one good game from Isaiah, and then you have a game where he drops every single pass and can't run and you know, can't pick up more than 3 yards, you know, after the catch. Cole Beasley, throughout his entire career with Dallas and Buffalo, I'm not even going to include the Tampa Bay stint, he has been nothing but that possession clutch receiver. And Josh Allen like desperately was even asking for Cole to come back. So I think it's a great fit. Same with the T.Y. Hilton and the Dak thing. I think it's going to work out well for them.
All right, I want to quickly buzz through these games because they
Let's do
stink.
it.
We could spend time on them, but let's just knock three of these out quickly.
Let's do it.
Arizona Cardinals, Denver Broncos. Broncos are a 3 to a 2.5 favorite at home. Who you got?
You know what? For the first time this year, let's ride, Broncos
Yes,
country.
we're back.
We're back, baby. We're back. I'm going Denver. Kyler Murray is out. I know that they have a capable backup quarterback in Colt McCoy, but I mean, Colt McCoy's been in the league for like 35 years. So, I mean, I'm just guessing that unless Russell Wilson is still in concussion protocol, which I don't think he is any longer, I think that the Cowboys will find a way to squeak out at least a 3-point win.
I agree with you. Let's ride. Been a very long time since we both picked Denver, but here we are. We like Denver. We like the points. Quickly here, the Los Angeles Rams are a 7 to a 6.5 point dog to the Green Bay Packers. This is your Monday night game. We're gonna quickly run through this one. Who you got?
I don't know what it is about Baker. I really want to take the Rams. I'm not going to. I think that Aaron Rodgers will go in there. There will be enough done. Both these teams are pretty much just absolute garbage dumpsters themselves. I'm going to take Green Bay and what were the points?
6.5 to 7.
Oh, screw that, man. I'm not taking the points at all. It's going to be like a 3-point game. It's going to be a field goal
Agreed.
at the end of the game kind of game.
Agreed. What a weird, listen, we said it earlier. What have I become? What has Baker become? Unbelievable. We were everybody, all out. We've shit on him. We've urinated on him, defecated on him, everything you can do that's negative to this poor man. And he shows up and he beats the fucking Raiders of all teams. I mean, yeah, just who's, I don't know who has had a fucking worst last 3 years. Las Vegas as a franchise or Baker Mayfield just as a quarterback. I'm not sure. I
Along
agree.
with that, thought real quick, Baker may have put the nail in Derek Carr's coffin.
Oof, listen, he might have also put the nail in Matt Stafford's coffin. It's fucking, there's layers to this, pal. I like Green Bay. I like the points. I think it gets away from the Rams late. I think the Baker story was fun, cute. It's over. Not a sexy game, but we're gonna hit it real quick. Cincinnati Bengals, 3.5 point favorites on the road to the Tampa Bay Bucks. Who you got?
I think this is going to be the nail in Tom Brady's coffin. I think Brady's
Wow.
already got retirement on his mind. I think Joe Burrow goes in there. He does Joe Burrow-like things. He's going to sling the rock all over the field, get like 340 and three touchdowns. I think it's going to be real ugly for Tampa Bay. Cincinnati wins. They win big. And Tom Brady is going to start wishing that he would have stayed at home with Giselle.
I think that Tom Brady was signing footballs for 49ers defensive backs because he wants to play there next year. And he's going to do everything in his power to get Jimmy G and fucking Trey Lance traded off of that goddamn team. I like Cincinnati. I love the points. Tampa Bay is trending down. And as I mentioned earlier, we might fuck around and get a New Orleans versus Tampa Bay coin flip here for that NFC South. Ugly game. The Las Vegas Raiders all over the place. I see pick'em. I see plus ones. I see minus ones. They are at home. They're playing the New England Patriots. This smells like a Bill Belichick W, like you wouldn't believe, Jess. Who you got?
I'm taking the Bill Belichick W. I think that Bill Belichick has this uncanny way of like catching these teams when they're just really hurt. And I think that after last week's game against the Rams, the Raiders is just really hurt. Derek Carr's hurt. Everybody's hurt. You know, Josh McDaniels is hurt. People talk about firing people. Like everybody wants everybody gone.
Oh, yeah.
Devontae
I've
Adams
been
is
trying to
like,
get that guy
screw it.
fired for like 10 weeks.
Yeah, right. So like I think that the Raiders are on the verge of like that implosion.
Yes.
And I think that this is the game that will probably do it.
Raiders are 1-3-2-1 Cancun for the next 3 weeks. They can give a flying fuck about these games, and they're just there to collect those checks. I love New England. I love the
Yeah.
points. The Tennessee Titans are a 3-point dog to the Los Angeles Chargers, Superchargers. I see LAC in my basketball mind go straight to the Clippers.
Clippers.
Jess, who you got?
I got the Chargers. If there's one team I know that's
Really?
trend if there's one team I know that's trending down, it is the Titans. I don't want to, you know what though? I don't want to blame Mike Vrabel, but I've come to really respect Mike Vrabel and what he's been able to do. But man, this Tennessee team is just, they don't look good. Tannehill looks off.
Yeah.
Derrick Henry looks off. The offensive, everything looks off. And nothing has been complete on the field, at least for the last 3, maybe 4 weeks. They're definitely trending down. I'm definitely going the opposite direction there.
The loss of A.J. Brown got this GM fired and washed this absolute team. Having that guy on this team was the difference. I was saying it all the last 2 seasons, this guy is a difference maker. You see it in Philly, and now you see it in Tennessee. The plus minus, if you will. I like the Chargers, and I like the points. There's one game left, but I kind of wanted to spend a moment on this because it's kind of fun. The New York Giants, they stink. We don't like them. The Washington football team, we absolutely love them. They're a 4.5-point favorite. They're at home. They're still trending up. Jess, I got a strong feeling this is going to be the second wild card team. Who you got?
You know what? I'm going to agree with you. I think that the Washington Commanders, they're on a path. I'm not saying they're going to get to the Super Bowl. I'm not even saying they're going to get past the first round of the playoffs, but by God, they are going to get to the playoffs. Ron Rivera's got this team in this mode.
Nobody believes in us.
Jay has been saying it for months. No one believes in us. And they go out and they just perform like way above what they should be performing at. They got all these running backs out there getting 100 yards, you know, whether it's rushing or receiving. Like, they got the scary Terry's out there catching one-handers like he's done it a million times before. You know, Taylor Heineken out there just hanky, out there just making the plays. The defense is coming along nice in the last couple weeks, and the Giants are just absolutely have become a shit show.
Yes.
So I'm taking the Washington Commanders, and I like the points.
Trending up versus trending down like you wouldn't believe. I said the Giants and the Seahawks would come back to earth 4 weeks ago, and here we are. We are now able to see the good teams, the great teams, and the mama mid teams. The Giants are mama mid, possibly lower. And I don't want to say it yet, but the Giants may be 3-2-1 Cancun as well. I like Washington. I like the points. And Jesse, we have hit every football game.
There we go. That's how we do.
15.
That is how we do. Folks, the playoffs are right around the corner. So just if you think that we have football talk now, wait till we get to the playoffs. That's it. Show's over. We got MMA stuff done for you. We went deep into MMA, actually deeper than I thought we were going to.
Yeah, we went long today.
We actually went deep into some of this NFL stuff, and I hope that you guys all enjoy it. It's all for your enjoyment anyway. I mean, we enjoy doing it, but we just hope that others enjoy listening to it. For myself and Jay, we thank you all for listening. If you can, please follow us on Twitter. Jason's over there at Valdez spelled backwards, 559. I am there at JTT81, and you can, of course, follow the show at TeamToss21. Folks, for all of you out there, happy holidays yet again. I hope that you've got your shopping and everything, hopefully, you know, closed up by now. If not, hit those last-minute shopping deals in Amazon. Folks, we're out. Have a good week.
Peace, guys.